Those huge blades here in Denmark are harvesting a crop of energy. Wind goes in and out comes clean electricity without the carbon dioxide or other gases linked to global warming that spew from a more typical coal-fired power plant. Denmark is a world leader in energy, and it's now figuring out how to store and use that energy even when the wind isn't blowing. How? Of all things, by putting electric cars into the hands of as many Danish families as possible. With the big Copenhagen Climate Change Summit on the way, we'll take a look at how Denmark is able to do things with energy that most countries can only dream of. Jenny Amius produced our report, part of a series of social entrepreneurs at work that we call Enterprising Ideas.
A single electric car is interesting enough. We're outside the convention center in Copenhagen, where that gathering of world leaders is happening in a couple of weeks. And there's this Nissan prototype, all electric. You couldn't put gasoline into this, even if you wanted to. The electric batteries don't seem to cut into the interior space at all, and it's amusing enough to drive. Notice the sound, or absence thereof.
And it's on.
And it's on.
But an electric car in itself is not revolutionary. They've had these since the turn of the last century. What is revolutionary in Denmark is that in the coming year, its roads are set to become thick with these things. Call it an infestation of electric cars. That's what's in the works here, powered largely with clean wind. This kind of radical energy transformation in the fight against global warming is fascinating, one that folks in all countries, including you, my fellow Americans, would do well to watch. The recipe involves people, policy, and some impressive technology. Stick around to see the robot that creeps under the car. But first, recipe ingredient number one, the people of Denmark who figured out how to live well while keeping their carbon footprints under control. Note the understated elegance of the business suit on the bike look. Check out this simple ramp molded into the wall to make rolling your bike up from the subway station easier. What does it cost them to put in? Next to nothing? And this not-so-little bicycle parking lot. But given the vagaries of the northern European weather, it takes a certain mindset to even consider cycling. Katrin Matareza and Karsten Jensen and their two little ones live near the center of Copenhagen. They don't consider themselves especially tree-hugging. However, they do get by without a car.
In the summertime, April to approximately October, I ride a bike to work. Oh, the transportation system is so good, so in less than an hour I'm at the job in the morning and home in the evening, so it's no problem.
Katrine ferries her son to school every day on foot, and it's not exactly around the corner.
And we walk 45 minutes each way.
Katrine is on maternity leave from her job as a teacher. Karsten services big diesel engines on merchant ships down at the port. A well-serviced engine puts out less carbon dioxide, Karsten points out. When the family leaves town every couple of weeks to see grandma, they grab the kids and take a 3-hour train ride to the south of the country.
It's like an adventure for the big one to travel by train. You can see the countryside and you have the time to talk and play with your children as well because you can't move. You're just staying there.
And then what happens when you get to where your mother lives? Do you have to walk to her house?
Yeah, then we walk 20 minutes.
20 minutes?
Yeah.
I'm wondering if there's an American family alive that would take a bus to a train with a 3-month-old and a 3-year-old and then walk 20 more minutes to their mother's house.
But it's not just outside the house where the family is keeping their carbon dioxide low.
We also keep a record, actually, on how much energy we use or electricity we use.
Every week.
We had no idea before we walked into this apartment that Katrine and Karsten would be quite this focused on limiting their use of electricity and, therefore, greenhouse gases. Their goal is to keep consumption at 50 kilowatt hours per week, less than a quarter of the typical U.S. consumption.
And so how do you do? Do you write it down or does it...
Mm-hmm. We write it down every week, yeah. And then we try to reduce it if we're using too much, and then we're happy if we use less than 50.
Part of the reason that so many Danes seem borderline obsessive about their energy use is because the country's policies make it very expensive not to be. There are, for instance, some wild taxes in Denmark that we'll hear more about in a minute. That's ingredient number two in the recipe for this country's energy transformation, public policy informed by history. Denmark was occupied by neighboring Germany during World War II. Until then, it had been importing coal from England, but it stopped under occupation. With few natural resources of its own, rising costs for coal and oil left the Danish economy especially vulnerable to price shocks. And 30 years later, it was still true when Denmark, along with the rest of the world, was rocked by the Middle East oil embargoes that sent prices skyward. At that time, 90% of the country's energy consumption came from oil. When that energy crisis hit, the Danish government took drastic measures. Danish drivers were forbidden to take their cars out on Sundays, shopkeepers were asked to turn off the lights, and conservation was in. The energy crisis also scared the bejeebers out of us. President Jimmy Carter sounded the alarm for energy independence.
The energy crisis is real. It is worldwide. It is a clear and present danger to our nation. These are facts, and we simply must face them.
Among other things, he gave tax credits for the use of renewable energy, even put solar panels on the roof of the White House. But there was a key difference. Unlike Denmark, the U.S. seemed to forget the lessons of the 70s. Under President Reagan, the solar panels came off the White House, and within a few years, fuel-efficient cars were eclipsed by gasoline-hungry SUVs. In Denmark, the bicycling of the 70s had become a habit that stuck. A succession of governments of all political stripes continued to embrace green energy, especially wind power. And the government kept the price of energy from fossil fuel high by American standards, in part through taxes. We've just filled the tank on this gas-powered car. The equivalent of 13 gallons cost $88. Bicycle, anyone? But now, Denmark is taking its move toward green energy into a new, more intensive phase. That's because there's still a lot of work to do. Despite all the windmills, this country still generates a lot of its electricity in ways that are bad for global warming. And a lot of that carbon dioxide is being brought to you by the biggest of this country's energy companies, Danish Oil and Natural Gas, acronym DONG. Anders Eldrup is the CEO of DONG Energy.
Around 85% of the power production we stand for is produced from fossil fuel, mainly coal, but also gas. And 15% comes from renewables, mainly wind.
Eldrup's huge undertaking now is to flip that ratio around.
Our target, my target, is within one generation to change this equation so that 85% comes from renewables and 15% from the fossils.
In the U.S., just 7% of our energy comes from renewables. DONG Energy's position is not quite what you'd expect from a big company with oil and gas in the name. Enlightened leadership is part of the reason, aided by the fact that DONG is nearly three-quarters owned by the Danish government, which has made it crystal clear that green energy is a key goal.
To the left is the storage building for the straw. So in there, the straw is stored for approximately a couple of days.
As part of the effort, DONG Energy is investing, through one of its subsidiaries, in some fancy new biofuels made from leftovers from farmers' fields. Right next to this coal-fired plant, bad for global warming, is the site for a new refinery that'll make ethanol from hay or straw, better for global warming.
And the tall building is actually where the main process starts. So that is the hydrothermal treatment is inside there.
In addition to the ethanol, the plant will produce a molasses stuff that can be fed to livestock, plus some extra fuel pellets, which will be used to power the plant itself, making it more self-sufficient.
Well, this is supposed to be working just up to the Copenhagen Climate Summit in December this year. And, of course, we have the whole world looking upon Denmark at that time, so we will have a wonderful audience for inaugurate this factory here.
In fact, the plan is to have all the delegates who come to the big summit in about a month driven in limos powered by biofuel. And let's not forget that the Danes have lots of experience with wind power for lots of reasons. It's a country that, after all, juts out into the blustery North Sea. It was a physicist from Denmark, H.C. Oersted, who discovered the principle of induction that's in every electric generator. And Danish farmers were the first to put up electric windmills. Dong Energy continues this tradition, although they have to be careful where they put them.
People like wind power, but they don't like wind power close to where they are living. And therefore we have been seeking ways to deal with this. And the way we are doing it now is to build the wind power offshore.
The company seems to be in a constant race to outdo itself with ever bigger offshore wind farms.
In the next 3 or 4 years, we get 3 new big offshore parks. That means we can provide up to 30% of the power consumption in Denmark with wind power alone.
And 6 weeks ago, this new farm opened for business with 90 turbines generating power for 200,000 homes. But make no mistake, wind can be fickle.
Sometimes it blows too much, actually, more than consumption can absorb. Sometimes it's too little. And the new battery technologies, they make it possible that we can take the wind power electricity, store it in a battery, use it when we like to use it. And that is actually also the reason why we started to put our interest on electrical cars, because if you have the batteries, why not put 4 wheels underneath?
Sure, why not? But doing it right and getting a whole country to embrace batteries on 4 wheels takes some clever planning and even smarter technology. Here's the fellow with the plan. Shai Agassi is a California-based social entrepreneur who says he's got a way to tame the fickleness of wind power and to mass-market electric cars at the same time. Agassi is a software guy whose life changed 4 years ago when a question was put to him. What would he himself do to make the world a better place?
I think I missed the point that it was a conversational starter, not a midlife crisis trigger. And I just got it into my head that we can solve the world's dependency on oil by solving this question of infrastructure for electric cars in a new business model.
He ended up calling his company Better Place. That is what he wants to make the world. In the recipe for Denmark's energy transformation, clever innovation goes alongside government policy and a population predisposed toward taking climate change seriously. Agassi's idea, if it can be made to work, store excess wind energy in lithium-ion batteries and use those batteries to power a new fleet of electric cars.
Wind comes at night and it stops and goes, and so they needed something that would balance this intermittent generation. And the best solution component, if you want, that matches it, the yin-yang between windmills, for windmills, is electric cars. And all the electricity that comes can come into the batteries. And so putting the entire fleet of cars in Denmark on batteries will allow the country to put 750 windmills in the sea and drive all the cars on these windmills. So you basically have a virtual oil field, 750 windmills, infrastructure, batteries, and cars, and you get off oil.
The plan is to build up a new infrastructure of charging stations that'll keep the car fleet moving. Agassi leaned heavily on the auto industry to come up with a nice enough, affordable electric car that could be mass-produced. Renault-Nissan rose to the occasion.
So every person will have access to a charge point at their home, because most of the charging will be done at night, which is also super important for the environment. Because if we were just charged in either early in the morning, you know, either in the afternoon, then we wouldn't have used all the wind power that we have available at night. Then also at your work, where you work, you'll have access to charge point there. And then wherever you go, whether that's airports, hotels, amusement parks, cinemas, shopping centers, then there'll be charge point in those public areas as well.
The biggest rap on electric cars, and I know you're thinking of it, you can't take them on long trips. Even though in America the average car trip is less than 10 miles, people worry about running out of juice the occasional times they do have to go further. Better Place has come up with the technology to remedy that. Remember that robot? Say you want to drive 200 miles to Grandma's. You put her address into the special GPS navigator. Under the plan for Denmark, the GPS will direct you to an electric filling station along the way, where a robot like this will reach under the electric car and swap out the battery in about 40 seconds. Try filling your gas tank that fast. It's like exchanging a used propane tank for the barbecue. And why would you want to leave your precious battery at the swap station? You don't care, because while you own the electric car, Shai Agassi's company will own the battery. You don't even pay an electric bill. You'll pay Agassi for every kilometer you drive. Agassi will pay Dong Energy for the wind power. Not only that, but Denmark's electricity grid will eventually be able to extract power from the cars while they're plugged in but not being used.
And there'll be hours in the day where the utilities will actually be able to tap into our batteries to power shave the peaks. And so at the worst times, the peaks of the peaks, they usually apply their most emitting, their most wasteful power plants. And with our batteries, they can stop using them. So we're actually going to even take off carbon from the grid.
But putting in the charge points and battery changing stations is going to be expensive, and there's no guarantee of success.
To some extent, it's a story about the hen and the egg. We have to do all these investments in the infrastructure in order to make it work. But at the time of doing them, we don't know if there will be any customers. But if we don't do them, there won't be any customers. So we must do them.
And the way that Denmark is working to bring in those customers is through tax policy. Let's remember that conventional cars in Denmark, by government design, are extremely expensive to run. You saw that $88 we spent on 13 gallons of gasoline. 53 of those dollars went to the government in taxes. But it is not just the gas. When you go to buy a new car in Denmark, sales tax runs 25%. That's not all. New cars also get hit with another tax, a kind of environmental excise tax of, are you sitting down, 180%. Add the 25% sales tax on top, and a $20,000 car suddenly costs $70,000. The government's bet is that given a choice between a $70,000 gas-powered car or one that costs $25,000, most will go for the cheaper electric option. The special tax status for electrics would stay in place not forever, but for a few years. Last year, Denmark took in over $2 billion from that tax on gas-powered cars. In such a small country, that money goes a long way. And there are those who question whether it makes sense for the government to forego so much cash to encourage electric cars in the fight against climate change.
If we spend money poorly, it means we can't spend it smartly elsewhere.
You're going to see a lot of this man as the media swarms across Copenhagen for the summit in a few weeks. He's Bjørn Lomborg, a controversial political scientist at the Copenhagen Business School. Lomborg is one of the country's most prominent skeptics when it comes to the road Denmark is following on climate change.
We could basically buy 18 new university-sized hospitals in Denmark for that amount of money.
Is making electric cars widespread the best use of taxpayer money? Lomborg prefers what he sees as cheaper alternatives, such as buying carbon offsets, like paying people in Brazil not to cut down rainforests, saving carbon dioxide there to allow pollution here.
We need to remember that there are constantly choices. Global warming is real. It is a man-made problem, and it is one that we need to fix. But we're not fixing it very smartly. Actually, we're not really fixing it at all.
We've heard the complaint here in Denmark that there are cheaper ways to keep carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere, that your approach with the electric cars is actually an expensive way to do that.
The thought process of we need the money for healthcare, so let them drive the cars that emit the gases that cost healthcare costs is the same as telling people, force them to smoke so that we can collect the taxes on the cigarettes so that we can pay for the hospital afterwards. That logic is convoluted in its design, and it is the denier's logic, not the people who see the future. You build for the future. You don't protect the past.
In his work to build for the future, Agassi also has agreements to bring electric cars to Israel, Australia, and Hawaii. Yes, our Hawaii. The first mass-produced all-electric cars are expected to arrive in Denmark in 2010. And Agassi wants his Denmark project to show the rest of the world that electric cars can be a mass-market product, which would be the paradigm-shifting achievement if he and his Danish partners can pull it off. Of course, as innovative as this country is, Denmark is a small place with a population the same size as Minnesota's. And they don't call it Danish warming. They call it global warming. For carbon dioxide-saving policies to be adopted on a wide scale will require global action, which is on the agenda for the impending summit in Copenhagen that'll be happening in the building right behind me. Dong Energy's chief says it costs nothing to dump CO2 into the atmosphere, and that needs to change.
If only one thing could come out of this Copenhagen climate meeting in December, I think the one most important thing would be to have a price, and I think a significant price on carbon. Because if you have a high price on carbon, that will divert the investments towards the new technologies, and that is what is needed to make this transformation, which we must do.
Amid the painstaking slog toward a climate change treaty, it's easy to forget the Danish example that fighting global warming can actually be fun if you have the money. Look what we found, by chance, on a Copenhagen street.
There's just not a sound, and there's no vibrations. And then after that, it's just the acceleration. I think we call it the Tesla smile, because when you push that the pedal down, it's just that, it's really fast.
It's a Tesla, made in California, USA, the only one in Northern Europe. The local Tesla rep happened to be in the shop buying diapers for his kid when our crew stumbled across this 0 to 60 in less than 4 seconds, all-electric, plug-in beauty. Unlike the Renault Nissan electric car designed for the everyman, this is a fancy roadster for fancy people. In the U.S., it costs, egads, about $110,000. Imagine what it would cost in Denmark with the crazy taxes. But remember, it's an all-electric car, and it's exempt from the 180% tax. For the lucky Dane who can afford one, it is an earth-friendlier supercar that'll sell for about a third of the normal price. And if power comes from the Danish wind, environmentalists say, so much the better.
What about those moves to bring electric cars en masse to not just Denmark, but to Israel, the great state of Hawaii, and beyond? And what about the big climate change summit here in Copenhagen? Perhaps 170 countries will be represented, but what are the chances that meeting can bring about real changes to the way we use energy in our own communities? Explore and learn more on our website.
Connect to now online at pbs.org. Danish folks are not the only ones who love their electric cars. Some Americans do as well. Actress and activist Alexandra Paul was so passionate about electric cars that she even got arrested for the cause. Check out our interview with Paul to find out what it's really like to drive a battery-powered vehicle in America. Connect to Now at pbs.org. On the next edition of Now. Believe it or not, in some parts of the country, it's an election year. What will Tuesday's results mean for President Obama, the ruling Democrats, and populist politics? We'll check in with the guy who wrote the book on the new populism, David Sirota.
And that's it for now. From in front of a wind farm off of Copenhagen, Denmark, I'm David Brancaccio. We'll see you next week.